Grazie mille, thanks a lot for a very, I would say, committed, fighting spirit, inspiring spirit, making, I think, us aware of a number of notions. You mentioned, okay, concept, you have to understand very well the specific definition of concept when you want to, exactly. to dialogue. Also, the new horizons that you are saying, we have to have, a long-term perspective and trying to put that into our local practices, making us aware of that. Certainly any kind of university setting where we are in a kind of enriching learning environment where also the education is changing its role in order to become responsible citizens.
Exactly, that's what we say, learning to live together. What does it mean today? And I didn't say to you just that the definition of culture. There are 500 definitions of cultures of culture. The one which is really important is, in three words, ways of living together. This is an extraordinary definition given to us when we met at UNESCO with the UN, with the International Commission on Culture and Development, to define this relationship between culture and development, understood not only in terms of economic growth, but as an intellectual and a spiritual development too. So I think ways of living together is something I didn't say, and I don't want to leave this room without underlying that behind all these terms, the term of living together, the ways of living together is the very the core of our debates in terms of human rights, of diversity, of dialogue, of governance, living together locally, regionally, nationally, globally. So what does it mean? It's a huge, huge program, but an exciting one.
No, I'm very grateful to you that you want to share with us, based on your long experience, some critical reflections, and yeah. I would say the message is clear, a new aggiornamento, a new agenda. And also a second thing, before I give the floor to the students, is your focus on the capabilities too. Also in my course, we are dealing with Amartya Sen in order to see how human capabilities has to be contextualized. Those capabilities.
Infused with intercultural elements and sensitivities and emotional education.
No, I think also what you were mentioning on the condition of cultural diversity, the self-reflexivity, sharing spaces for learning and embracing different spaces that we don't have, let's say, the whole truth. Educational, emotional education, I think that's a rather important when you are trying to link it with the symbols, the exchange between the sign and the meaning. So it's up to you, I think, take advantage of...
I'll be happy to respond rather than to have...
So you see, I think it's very important in this kind of trying to have a creed for a new agenda, to have critical persons who have this kind of experience. Okay, Katerina, I can really say she's not the normal example of an international civil servant, as you have. Critical reflection.
But I survived.
So life stories are very important in that kind of testimonies, life testimonies, which can give you the proof that one should continue to fight. Okay, please.
Please, please.
Please, do. Please. Stand up so that we, because the acoustic is not always, or maybe a little bit close. Come a little bit closer, so...
Yes.
And the cultural relativism, that is necessary in order to have, as you said, an effective dialogue between cultures. And then I have another question that is linked with the previous one. I would like to ask you to introduce a very interesting concept.
Can you just speak a little bit louder?
Louder.
intercultural dialogue. Would expand human rights.
And yeah, expansion.
I really didn't get entirely the point of this, so I would like you to deepen this.
the link and then answer maybe immediately. I think that's
okay.
better.
Yeah. This is a huge. These are huge questions, of course. You who told me that you didn't understand or I didn't develop sufficiently the relationship between cultural relativism and human rights, or not?
And the universalism of,
human rights. And yes, this is the whole issue we have between anthropologists and human rights activists. But what we have tried to do within a critical, or rather adopting a critical approach to different theories, is the following. We felt that there is no antinomy between the universality of human rights and the cultural diversity issue. Why? First of all, because human rights are there to protect cultural diversity. When you have cultural rights, for instance, which is part of human rights, d'accord? Okay? Linguistic, persons belonging to linguistic, national, or ethnic, or religious minorities, for instance. This is a diversity issue. And you have human rights who defend them. So human rights automatically guarantee the flourishing of cultural diversity already. So it is not more a local agenda. It can become an extraordinary agenda because human rights can defend all this kind of, not claims, of issues on persons belonging to minorities, for instance. That's why we say that human rights are the guarantee of cultural diversity. From the other point of view, cultural diversity, what I have tried to say, but maybe not in a such convincing manner yet, is that it offers a fertile ground to human rights to expand themselves. Why? Because they have different ways of grammar, of vocabulary, to better understand what are we speaking about, what is the format of this kind of claim or problem or issue we have to defend. So I'm trying to show a reciprocity, a kind of interdependence. Human rights don't exist without cultural diversity. And cultural diversity cannot survive without the presence and the space it can gain because of the human rights approach. I don't know if it is, it is not a question of small or big. You see what I'm trying to say? It's not a question of universality of human rights per se, and cultural relativism as if it had to do with a local, very local issue. It has to do in qualitative terms. Human rights as a kind of ethical platform, and the other elements as general or local or less local or regional or whatever realities which have to feed each other. The second question, you asked me what is, why intercultural dialogue expands, you told me?
Yeah.
Human rights. I think that it is even more evident than the previous element because when you are engaged in dialogue, you are able to better understand the ways the other partner is engaging or not in human rights. You may better understand why is he hesitating, which are his fears, his oppositions, his religious beliefs which don't allow him to go here or there. So this kind of analysis of emotional education too, or cultural literacy too, gives the intercultural dialogue, offers the intercultural dialogue a better framework to analyze, a kind of lens to analyze and to understand the possibility of expansion of human rights. Is it a little bit clearer or not?
Yes.
But if not, please tell me where it is not, because it is, they are difficult notions, I understand, but we have to try little by little, even together, to make them more workable and more evident. But really, for intercultural dialogue and human rights, when you speak with someone, and if you say, you have not the right to do this, that, what is that, he can say. But if you try to understand under this lens, you cannot take this glass from here and to put it there, because according to my tradition, this is against the order to, I don't know, to elders. I don't know. You have to know what is behind and to go little by little to this deconstruction of the arguments and to engage into a new argumentation.
Silence. No other question? Please.
Please. Come, even we think, you, if you want to underline something I've said or something it's not yet clear, go on, it's a good opportunity.
Stand up, speak loudly.
Union, yes, I
think. Without me. So I will ask you, which is this new approach? For me, maybe it's an observation. Maybe it's a return to a local, from an attention, a more attention, not only for the charter and the treaties, but for the human beings and which is the consequence of this charter in the normal life of everyone. So my question is, which is the new approach in practice? So, I don't know if it's clear.
Yeah, in practice, you're right. In practice, what does it mean when once we have said all these nice things about this and about that, and when we say that cultural diversity is not a mosaic but a constant process which supports, amplifies, and regenerates all cultures. And I think the fertilization element to regenerate all these cultures is dialogue. Otherwise, cultural diversity is reproduced identically. Only with dialogue, diversity is becoming something new and something different. And it's a process, as Levi-Strauss has said. It's a process, it's not a product. It's not just what I have in my jacket today. It's a process, it may change to tomorrow, it may take another color within that. This is an important element. Now, the implementation of all these things in policy design, I have not given the very precise examples, concrete examples, because I wanted maybe to share a little bit the time of our exchange, has to do with the whole public policy. And we have to see what kind of policy. I have just said that we need to have a new format of policy design by putting together policy, governments, city. You have spoken about cities, civil society actors, all this immediate democracy we have today with internet, all these new forms. So we have to invent all these new forms. But more precisely, if we want to touch or to tackle more concrete elements, we can say that you have education. What have we to teach? You are teaching mathematics. I'll give you a very precise and dull example. Mathematics. What a more technocratic issue. If you know that all these figures are coming from the Arab world, that the zero is coming from the Indian culture, etc. Why not to introduce and to say, by the way, you know, all these figures are not the Latin figures who were so complicated to read. They came from the Arab world. It's a kind of dignified policy when you say that. I don't know if you follow me, sir. So in when you have a kind of teaching, and it is not just that, and when you teach other cultures of the world, I have started by saying my personal feeling yesterday when I was in a church, I think it was No, I don't know if it was Saint Antonio or the other Saint
Justina,
where I have seen an icon painted by Saint Luke, blessed Saint Luke, the evangelist, who is from whose tomb is in my own city, in Thebes. And I've read that Padua has undertaken a series of exchanges to give or not to give to Thebes, this and that, and the icons. I've started, my God, I said, why not to put it in a kind of exchange program when we have touristic exchanges? Why not to know what kind of cultural itineraries are there? This is a very sampled personal example, but I was so moved because I know all these things and I have seen the copies, but I have never seen the original. And if you are a real sensitive, culturally speaking person, you want always to see the original. Of course, copies are excellent because they give us a comprehension of the non-existing world, etc., etc., democratization of knowledge or whatever. But when you see the original, it's the original. It is better to see what goes together. Even for cultural heritage, you may know UNESCO has this very famous list on the outstanding value of cultural heritage. What does it mean? It means that when a cultural good is perished, the whole humanity is impoverished. So this is very important. It's very strong as message. You will not see anymore the manuscripts in Timbuktu. You will not see anymore the Assyrian monuments destroyed by the Islamic State 2 weeks ago. This is reducing, shrinking. This is going to shrinken our humanity's aesthetics and our achievements, humanity's achievements. We do need our past to better invent our future. So it is good to teach all these things together, but not in such a way which does give relief to your local cultures. No, you have to underline local cultures, national cultures, or whatever, but more, you have to underline the relationships, cultural relationships, the intellectual relationships. Where did these people come from? Which was their doctrine? Where did they stay? Why not to name a square with this, the name coming from a scholar from abroad? Why not? Why not? Like that, you remember that someone else in the past has given his wisdom here. And with this wisdom, something new as kind of chemistry was produced. So even when we are speaking about, you have the urban planning, you have to have all this intercultural sensitivity. Urban planning, what does it mean? How are we going to name the streets? How are we going to put some elements here and there, or gardening, or biodiversity, when you are doing all this environmental teaching, etc.? Are we highlighting enough where all these foods are coming from? I don't know, tomatoes or whatever. This is for maybe little children, but it's for all of us. It's a kind of intellectual and human solidarity. It's a very important solidarity, intellectual and moral, not human, intellectual and moral solidarity. So all these policies, which are dignified policies in education, in culture, in museums, when you are in a museum and you showcase this Roman Empire, the Greek Empire, because we are lucky we have so outstanding cultures and civilizations, why not to showcase the relationships they have undertaken, and which was the result of that, and which is the difference? You may become more critical. I'll say, and you may know that, as Greek, the Roman is an imitation. It's not true. What I have found in Roman statutes, of course, it's not always what I have found in Greek, classic Greek statutes, but what I have found there is something else which was missing in my own culture, which was very much interiorized or whatever. There are elements we have to be able to read and to identify. I think we can expand like that our internal space and external space, of course. So education, in the media, when you give all these examples in media, all this cliché, how to put some, to have some more time to announce something new in media, something good news coming from somewhere else, and not always this blood news with the other cultures. So it's a kind of
balance
and filter. What do you present and what do you don't present? How do you educate your society? And of course, campaigns, when you are in a school, even in university. There was a very famous campaign some years ago, I don't know if it is going on do one thing for diversity. The 21st of May is the World Day for Diversity, Dialogue and Development. No one is doing things. Saturday, there was the World Day Against Racism and Discrimination. There is a banalization of all these things. We have to refresh all these approaches. And if the 21st of March is against that, the 21st of May, it is in favor of. So what we have tried to do is once to condemn and to speak out when something unjust is in around the world, and the other is do something positive for diversity by reading a poem coming from another world, by showing a fresco coming from another culture, by describing a fable coming from other, an anecdote or other humor ideas coming from other cultures, things like that, just to instill and to keep your mind alive, not with a kind of cultural sufficiency, not be culturally sufficient. This would be, I think, the general motto. And like that, you can infuse any kind of policy. You can be sensitive enough to move and to feel that you have to do this, that, but without being destabilized. This doesn't mean that you have to abandon your own culture, not at all. And a very well-known French philosopher, Merleau-Ponty, said that when you go outside your own culture and you have a kind of immersion within a new culture and the language, it's something extraordinary because you cannot have this immersion with all the cultures of the world and all languages of the world. But you become culturally literate because you are able to come back to yourself and to rediscover the hidden regions of your own culture and personality. So can you imagine how important this lens is to better understand your own culture? Voilà.
Thanks a lot. Another question, yes.
Ah, voilà. Now
they are coming. Stand up, maybe a little bit closer so that we hear.
We have to speak about human rights, but also about human duties,
yes.
Because in this kind of global economical world, we are linked together, and the mind the field where we are. So, another kind of work that we have to do is be consciousness and having knowledge to know in which way we are involved in the violation of another people's rights and another cultural diversity. Because when we consume a good a kind of service, we can influence the determination, the existence of another cultures or peoples, like the Amazonian, for example. And in camp, in this camp, there is another principle, I think, that's the human know what, in which way we influence the other part of the world.
Did you understand exactly the question?
But what's on the real question?
It's a comment. Mm-hmm. It's a comment. Okay.
I think we collect the questions
okay,
and then
yeah.
otherwise.
Okay.
So there
okay.
were some other. Yes, please. Stand up, please.
Je partage complètement.
Nous allons nous revoir. D'accord? Nous resterons en contact.
Yes. Yeah, please do.
Pardon.
Inform. Yes, the back, please. Come a little bit because. Very good. And last one, and then we, yes, please. Okay, thanks. Okay,
yes.
Maybe...
Yes, just to back up.
Yes.
Let's start with the easiest, the formal and informal education, the easiest question. Of course, the formal education is the one, you know, the classrooms, we cannot change that, we are here, you are there, but hopefully you have the right to draft, to conduct your dissertations, to have your own point of view, to elaborate, etc. You are already in another. We didn't change it from. This is the only way we have today to transmit knowledge. And this is a good way if your teachers are good enough for the transmission of knowledge, taking into account, of course, that they are making you active partners in this debate, and they are asking you to participate, to question what you are here listening, and to go beyond. Of course, today, the informal, unfortunately, I say, sometimes, unfortunately, the informal education became more important than the formal one. Because students and pupils or people have more possibilities to have a kind of self training and self-education via Google, via this and via that, than to have a kind of formal schooling shaped according to the tradition of each member state. And of course, Europe has a common model. Why I say unfortunately? Because you see every kind of truths and non-truths on the web, and when you are you have as source only the informal education process, you may risk to be manipulated by or indoctrinated by different people, as we have seen recently with mosques or with these websites which were invited young men who are frustrated with their everyday life to join the Islamic State. So the informal education is good as far as non-democratic states allow to people to complete and to rectify the knowledge they receive at school. But there is this danger, as I said. There is risk, which is an important risk today. I still believe that informal education is extraordinary and a very important source. And it is not just that, it's the literature we buy, it's the museums we see, it's the street culture, it's the ambiance, as we say. It is not just what we see on the website, it's on television, the stereotypes, the way we vehicle, we transmit it, all these elements. It's a tricky question, but a very important one. Now, about the question again and again, how to cope with the respect of human rights and the cultural relativism when you have cultural traditions. And of course, we are not going again to speak about genital mutilation, because it's in a very precise category. And it is not just that. But I'll say, from the African point of view, instead of criticizing African regimes, which have to be criticized very often, as well as the Europeans or others or Asians, etc., let me take positive examples of respect, of mutual respect. And that's why I have quoted the Ubuntu principle, which is the way of South Africa to put people together and to live together. Ubuntu is to make society, faire société, as we say in French, living together. We have elaborated so much in Europe to showcase what does it mean, ways of living together. And the, I think Hossa, a word, Ubuntu, shows all these elements together. So why not to look there? Which are the elements promoting human rights, the place of sitting, the ranking or the order of giving voice to women, to children or not, or to respect or not to respect a hierarchy or whatever. So I'm trying to say that there are still possibilities to adopt a positive approach and to see what are these existing elements offering to culture, to human rights, the possibility to expand, because there is something there which is not yet called human right. They don't recognize themselves under this term of human rights. They recognize it as a cultural, as an ethos. But why not? Cultural rights have to become an ethos at the very end, to be an automatic reflex, if possible, and not a claim, as you said. And regarding the always this conflict, of course we'll have this conflict even within our European cultures and human rights defense. As you know very well, we still lack or we still need to precise and to widen the space of human rights, as we are now, even today, under this threat of terrorism. And you see all these legislations on security, and you have human rights people who say you abuse with the security measures because you are following my smartphone conversations, you are following my localization when I'm going out of the house, etc., etc. So this limits, this debate is always an accurate debate, even in for Europe. So there are different levels of debate on that. And what does it mean? It means that human rights is always an horizon to be achieved. It is not something who a country has, another country does not, has not. So it is an horizon to be achieved. And I will be more grateful for your professors and yourself here if you live with the idea that we are in a permanent process of seeking truth through a real, a sincere intercultural dialogue, having as a kind of flag, the kind of compass, the human rights setting, not as a kind, as I said, as a kind of camisole de force, something you have to wear in order to be human, but as a kind of enabler factor of something which gives you the
richer.
The strength, the power you need to become more human and to exercise your full humanity. You cannot exercise your full humanity if you have not this compagnon, as we say. I don't know how you can say compagnon de route. This kind of vademecum, a kind of vademecum. You have to have it in your bag always. It is with you, but it is within you. It's not only with you. And it will be the filter for everything else. And of course, the relativism, it is within our houses, it is within our classes, it is within our governments, it is within the world. But if we already accept this sensitivity to change, and to be ready to change, and to expand our ways of seeing, living, and feeling, I think we are on the good path. This, I think, would be the final message, and like that we can become real citizens of Padova, of Italy, of Europe, of the world. And when something is going to happen in Iraq or somewhere else, you may suffer. You have to suffer because the world is becoming poorer, and you are going to become poorer, and your children are going to become even more than you. So we have to develop this global concern, not only for the global warming, not only for the global war, but even for these cultural crimes or other educational crimes.
Thanks a lot. I really-